The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
And greetings, true believers, and welcome once again to IGN's Friendly Neighborhood PlayStation Podcast. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined today by my good friends, Jada Griffin, Brian Altano, and joining us from all the way in the UK, Simon Carty, who just reviewed Spider-Man 2. Hey, everybody.
I did. I'm you swinging did? Into action.
You are. So now, before we get into this, I just want to say this week's episode is going up a little bit early so we could hit the embargo of the review going up. We're going to get into the sort of nitty-gritty of it, but we're going to try to steer as clear of spoilers as superhumanly possible. Obviously, your mileage may vary with spoilers, so if you've been steering clear of the last, you know, three trailers, there might be some stuff in here that spoils things. If you want to go in totally cold, stop listening to this right now, go play the entire game, and then come back and push play again. If you want to get into spoilers, next week we're going to be doing a big, huge spoiler cast where we talk about all the stuff, all the things. So beat the game before then. That one might go up a little bit late, so everyone has a little more time to play it. We may have a surprise guest. Who knows? On that note, let's get into it. Hey, what's up?
Hey.
Hello.
So, Cardi, you reviewed Spider-Man. You gave it a 9?
An 8.
An 8? An 8 out of 10,
well,
really?
Go.
You know, Akeem's going to fight
you. It's a great out of 10.
He seriously said that if we didn't give it a 9, he was going to have words.
No. He said whoever's reviewing the game better give it a 9. And he did while laughing, and we were all laughing. But it didn't stop.
I'm scared of Akeem as well. So
I know. He's actually on vacation this week, and he couldn't join us, which is a bummer because he also played through Spider-Man. But
No, I think he saw the review and took the vacation and because of it. He needed a week to cool off.
Yeah. Well, look, there's very good reasons why I've given it an 8 and not a 9. And I can tell you that if you want. I mean, that's probably why I'm here, isn't it?
Maybe.
I mean, I think it's a great game. I really, really enjoyed it. And arguably, I actually think it's probably the best of the three because I would probably rate the other two 8s personally. So I think if you're looking for a great Spider-Man story, you've got another one here. If you're looking for what you got in the past two games, you've absolutely got that here. And that is kind of part of the good and part of the bad of why this is so much like those, which is it's a great Spider-Man story. I really think it does some cool things with the characters that I haven't seen before. And I'm sure other people, especially on this podcast, who have read a lot more Spider-Man have seen some of these things before, but I haven't. But also, the thing that brings it down is you've got all of the open world stuff from the last two games, which first time around was kind of fine. It was good. I had some fun with it. But then it kind of hasn't really evolved at all. And you're doing the same sort of, you know, stopping the same cars in the street,
right,
setting out, like putting out the same fires on buildings, and then occasionally just carrying people this time to ambulances when the hospital's much closer, which is slightly confusing. But
by open world stuff, you don't mean like traversal and stuff, obviously, right? Like you're talking about like the side content, the optional, the, you know, your phone's constantly going off in this game. Spider-Man, help! There's like people getting beat up. There's monsters. There's there's a gang on a roof. How'd they get up?
Yeah,
there?
Moving around the open world is still fantastic, and gliding is definitely arguably is it more fun than swinging? I don't know. Maybe I'm just so used to web swinging by now that you know that's kind of lost a little of its luster. But yeah, getting around the world, fantastic. It's just the things that you're doing there that aren't main missions, and there's a couple of side like quest lines that are interesting and do some cool things, but yeah, it's all the random crime stuff that you had to do a lot of in the first game, especially if you wanted that platinum. Thankfully, It is all completely optional this time. You don't have to do any of those random street crimes. But then there are a long checklist of other things which are quite mundane. Like calling them puzzles sometimes is a stretch. They are technically puzzles.
I've been describing them to friends who have also played the game. Not random people, because I don't break embargo to, you know, guys at a birthday party or whatever. But a lot of the puzzles in this game are kind of a lot like the lab puzzles you did in the first game, in that they feel like the kind of stuff that like a child would do at a children's science museum. Like there's you know, it's like little interactive sliding puzzles and like connecting shapes to make a plant so that you could clone.
Yeah, they're like the puzzles you'd find on the website for like a PBS kids show.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, that sounds mean, but they're like, I mean, there's a lot in this game that is, you know, doing big ass prestige, you know, AAA video game drama, and it's got really strong writing. And then there's other stuff that feels like stuff you'd find in a Spider-Man game for children. And that's okay. Yeah. You know,
because there's going to be a lot of children playing this game. So like Spider-Man is a big seller for kids. So like, I'm not 100% mad that the puzzles and stuff were smaller or easier on the easier side of things. But, you know, I would have liked to see some other tweaks that we could have done, whether it was difficulty based or whatever.
Yeah, I think that was my whole thing with a lot of this was that like the traversal and combat are some of the most impressive things I have ever seen in a video game, straight up. Like I do not understand how some of this is functioning. Like in Insomniac Games is technically on a level I don't think I've ever seen before. Like it does not make sense to me. It is masterful wizardry how you can whip through the air this fast, this quickly in a city this gorgeous, pop out the wingsuit, fly down to the ground and immediately dive kick into some dude's face and basically not touch the ground. Now, this is obviously something they've done 3 games in a row now. So the new car smell for me was like kind of missing in general. But when this game is moving, when you are doing the Spider-Man stuff in Spider-Man and you're not like crawling around and you're not playing as, you know, another character who maybe doesn't have superpowers or anything like that. It's unreal. It's I've just never seen anything this cool. I kept expecting it to crash or break or explode and it didn't. So holy shit.
Yeah. I think I agree with your 8, Cardi. Mm-hmm. If I were to grade just the sort of technical side of it, it might be a 10, yeah. But mm-hmm. you know, obviously it's more than that. There's also sort of like something that kind of baffles me. We can talk more about this later. The fast travel is maybe the fastest fast travel I've seen in a game, but also the whole point of the game is to swing around and be Spider-Man, you know? So it's sort of it's an odd, you know, utilization of that. The open world stuff, you likened it a little bit to, you sort of compared it to the Arkham games in your review, which I think is a fair comparison. You know, children have been arguing on the playground about who would win in a fight, Batman or Spider-Man, for a million years now. In this case, like, you know, the last Arkham game was, what, 2015? That was a couple minute ago. I think there was sort of, you know, there's always that issue with threequels, which this ostensibly is, if you count Miles as a full game. But there's that kind of expansion, you know, like the sort of increase from Asylum to City to Arkham Knight, which to me kind of felt like this does, where it's like, it's, you've done a lot of this stuff before and there's a lot of bloat and there's a lot of technical polish that makes it more interesting, but it's also, you know, it's kind of at odds with itself. And in this case, you know, it is definitely a quality quantity debate. And
yeah,
technically it was stunning. It's really awesome to see it, but there's also, you know, you have to kind of stop and be like, how much of this is what the game is doing and how much of this is what I've actually done before in previous games?
The reason I made the Arkham comparison is because I've played so many open world games at this point, and rarely do you play one, I think, that does something genuinely you haven't seen before, right? And for example, like, this game, like, does so many things so well. I don't want to be down this game because we'll get on to maybe how good the story and stuff is later, but it's just, there's nothing in that open world, I think, that does anything that blew me away, whereas I talk about Arkham Knight, which is actually my favorite of the Batman games. I know some people don't love it as much, but just that moment where out of nowhere, Man-Bat just scares you. And it's just that world feels alive for that moment. Like, never once in this game is, like, there are the random street crimes, but it's the same, like, you know, it's not, you know, it doesn't feel like that world is happening to you. Or I compare it to, you know, like, I don't know, the Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War games with the Nemesis system. That was something I'd never seen before. Like, just something new in an open world I wanted to see this time around, which is why I've ultimately landed on 8. Like, if this was just a narrative, like a single player story game, probably would be a 9, because I do think that main campaign is very, very good, and especially the second half just is excellent.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the open world for me that does bring it down a little.
Yeah, go for it, Jada.
I was going to say, yeah, the whole feeling of the world kind of not being, feeling as lived in as like Mordor or anything else like that, that was kind of one of my biggest kind of gripes with it, just because it feels like you're just interacting with the world, but like the world doesn't interact with you. So like it's feels very limited at times. And like, you know, I've told everybody else on this, like I stopped bothering with regular crime about 4 hours into the game. Which makes me arguably a terrible Spider-Man, but like
I did as well. Yeah,
there's just no point. Like it just like it was just a distraction. It was more of a distraction than anything it added. Yes, you get some supplies, you get experience and stuff, but you get so much experience and supplies for doing the side missions and the main missions that at the end of the game, you may need to do like one or two side crimes to finish off a district, all the rewards and stuff to get your platinum trophy and stuff. Like that was it. I do like a lot of the things they did with the open world. I love the new UI with like the digital things that pop in the sky. I think that was a really smart way to be like, hey, this is where all your objectives are, instead of having to break up the action, look at a map and do that. But I like Cardi said, I really wanted something to like attack me or to appear, something to just trigger, whether it's like a smaller Spider-Man villain to appear and show up that he's like, hey, like I'm doing a crime now. Like I would have loved if there was like not only these like henchmen and thugs or whatever lower level bottom tier criminals doing stuff, if we would have gotten things like where we would have had like Vulture or Shocker or anybody else that had broken out of the raft or done something and was committing a crime and doing that. And yes, we fought a bunch of these villains in the first one, but Spider-Man has such a massive rogues gallery of villains. It would have made a ton of sense to have something like that more and give me more reason to play it after rolling credits.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, people are breaking out. I need to go stop this dude and have a good, like, maybe not a full-on boss fight, but a stronger fight, something that actually tests me.
Yeah, I think there's like, you know, it's tricky to dock points against a game or to criticize a game for something it doesn't do rather than something it does do or attempts to do and how well it does it. But I totally went into this expecting there would be something like Man Bat. There would be something kind of persistent in the world. And this is also something that could go either way. It could become like, you know, dragons in Skyrim where they just show up when you least want them to. But between, you know, between stuff we'd seen telegraphed, and again, I guess this could constitute a spoiler. But between Lizard and Venom and Kraven, which we all knew were in here, I was expecting one of them to be like a threat that was just out there, as opposed to being kind of walled off in story missions, which they are.
No, you're mostly fighting their henchmen and stuff like that. And I think the closest this comes to having like a Man-Bat is that you'll go down to do a crime and Miles will be there to tag team in. And like, there's some fun stuff that happens with that, but it all goes by so quickly. They quip with each other a little bit and it's over. But these are like inconsequential, completely optional things that, like we said earlier, most of us you just kind of ignore after a while. And I think that's like what like where this didn't totally come together as much for me was, and I was talking about this too, like I was texting Max about this. This is the third Spider-Man game we've gotten in 5 years. And the first one we got was just like a reboot of like a video game series that we had all loved at some point in our lives, but had very clearly, you know, kind of lost its way. You couldn't really count on the quality of Spider-Man video games for a little while there, right? And then there were some classics as well. And then this time around, it's like we got Spider-Man, then we got Miles, which was the shorter, you know, new character focused New York City at Christmas time. And this kind of brings all the tricks together, and some of the stuff that it does in this game that are new this time around is stuff that I actually didn't really use much. It's mostly optional. Like you can switch between characters most of the time, right? Like there are certain story missions that funnel you into specific characters and force you to switch to Peter or Miles, but I didn't really find myself switching characters often. I mostly just played as the one that I was like, it was wearing the coolest suit I liked at the time. Number two, there's all this new stuff with like the web shooter and the stealth takedowns and stuff like that. And like, I would go into a warehouse and there'd be 50 people in there and I'd be like, yeah, I could creep around in the rafters and shoot webs and tie people up and go stealth. But it's so much more fun to just jump down there and just go fists out and just beat the ever living hell out of everybody down there. And you could do it so much quicker. And it just felt like something Spider-Man would do a little more. Like, it's also just immensely satisfying and rewarding to just drop down and everyone goes, it's Spider-Man. And you just punch him, you know, punch 50 guys in the face. You're just throwing your spider bots everywhere. You're hitting both triggers at the same time and both sticks and lightning's exploding and all this fun stuff. And like, that's, you know, that felt like a fireworks show every time. Whereas just like sneaking around in the ceilings was like, that's all right.
It feels like that's something they kind of figured out with Miles. I mean, there's plenty of that in the first one, but the fact that Miles has the added, you know, invisibility power, that's something they explored pretty thoroughly in, I guess, the second one. This time around, it feels like they kind of nerfed the stealth, and it's, you know, it's fine, but there's the new webline tool where you can basically just creep wherever you want, and you want to take the time to pick off enemies, you know, one by one or two by two or whatever, depending on what you've got upgraded. You can do that, but again, it's just kind of like, there's no real upside to doing the stealthy approach when you can just go in and just beat people up like a superhero, you know?
I mean, it does help with like recharging your gadgets, recharging your abilities and stuff a little bit faster, filling your focus without having to burn through it. So like, if you know you have something, a story mission you're going to do and you want to make sure everything's full and stuff like that, it does have a benefit to doing it that way. I know that's what I usually use the stealth for. I enjoyed the stealth, but it definitely, you just feel a little too powerful for the stealth is the thing. Is like, it took away a lot of the challenge. There's an upgrade you get where you can take down two people at once. Sorry if that's a spoiler. It's an upgrade. It's in the tree. You'll be able to see it like minute one.
They're going
to
be in the tree too when you web them up there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I actually, you know, use the little web lines to build little cool intricate designs and stuff like that because you can connect the web lines to each other.
I wrote some swears, but the criminals don't look up, so they didn't even see. No, don't do that.
I think that's kind of a kudos to how well Insomniac did combat. Like, they made combat so fun, so exhilarating, so just like rewarding feeling. Like, you feel all those punches, you can feel the impact of every blow. Like, that is a very important thing when it comes to combat. You like the combat, you need to be able to feel that. Like, there's games like, you know, Spider-Man God of War where you can feel the impact when you hit an enemy. Yep. Like, they stagger back, they fall back. And then there's other games where sometimes you feel like you're just like brushing them or whatnot, like with a fan or something like that. You don't know, like you have no reaction. It just doesn't feel like good combat. And so Spider-Man 2 does that amazing with all of Miles's new abilities, all of Peter's new abilities, like all the new gadgets and how the gadgets work interlocking with your abilities. Like, it just feels so rewarding to pull off those combos where you just web everybody together and then shock punch them, venom punch them, or do any of the other new moves and stuff.
Yeah, and like you're completely spot on. I think that like the combo system in this game is ridiculous. It's probably the smoothest combat I've ever seen in any superhero game. It's also like, it's, you can be silly and button mashy about it and go through your normal routines. And like, honestly, towards the end of the game, I was doing a lot of that. Cause like, I swear like the last 5 or 6 hours is a lot of like just dumping mobs on you and having you clear them out to get to the next thing to dump on, you know, get through another mob. But like there's so many things in the skill trees that you can unlock that are like, maybe not your usual standard go-to like combos, but like there's stuff that's there for, if you're interested in it. And so I think that like people who want to like play through the game and then play through it again slightly differently, they're going to get some depth out of that. Cause I think otherwise that like, once you 100% the game, they're really, and this is most games, but there really isn't any reason to go back. I think a lot about, we were talking about like, you know, like the kind of emergent gameplay of like having a random villain or something pop out. Far Cry 6 did a really cool thing where after you rolled credits, they were like, hey, like people keep bothering this fake Cuba. And so every week you'd go in and like new sections would get invaded. Imagine like playing a Spider-Man game where like after you rolled credits, like every week you'd check in and like a new gang would return to a section of New York City. You'd have to clear them out and stuff like that. That's not really here. So like once you beat the single player campaign and then go through all of the side stuff, you're kind of done. Like the only thing, there's a couple optional missions that you can go back and A rank, but like they're not really the most interesting ones. They're like the Mysterio stuff. And so like that's my advice to people who want 100% this game. Play it like this, like do a little story, then do a little side stuff, then do a little story and a little more side stuff. Because if you do like a bunch of story and then like mainline one whole like side quest, which like this game does that thing where it's like, here's a new quest. Cool. Did you like that? Now there's 14 more of them. And they're just like the ones you played with very little variation.
Yeah.
And
it's an open world game.
Yeah. You'll burn out on those pretty quickly if you don't kind of like, you know, amuse-bouche it a little bit.
It does. It does a funny thing where there's like very clearly like it's, you know, it's video gamey as hell. And there are these like, you know, different colored icons on your map that you're going to have to do 14 of or whatever. But the first time you do one of those, it almost seems like it's setting up like a proper story. Like some of these things are like basically just like collectathons. And then some of them are like, you know, side quests through lines. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to separate which is which. Like sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, I just got to go get these treasure chests. And sometimes like, I got to chase these robot birds. And sometimes it's like, oh, there's actually like a story arc that's going to happen here. And it's, I feel like it almost kind of devalues it a little bit. The fact that they're all kind of placed with the same importance on the map.
Yeah. You never know quite what you're going to get with them, do you? So like there is a really good side quest that I think is called The Flame. I won't delve into what that's about, but it actually tees up probably what I think the DLC is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But and that has some really like that is almost like a B plot line. It's only like four or five missions, but that is actually worthwhile and actually, you know, good fun. Whereas, like you said, there's some where it's like starts off a mission, then it's go collect 42 of these things, and then you'll get a cool little scene at the end, which is a cool little scene that I really enjoyed. But you know, that was it. I was just like, oh, so there wasn't really anything more to that. But yeah, I don't want to be too down because I do think this is a really good game. Ultimately,
We're nitpicking.
To be said for we also all played it on like a pretty tight timeline, you know. And again, there's that Bruce Bogtrotter phenomenon where you have to eat an entire chocolate cake in one sitting. Good problem to have, but like, yeah, trying to mainline this game might not be the best approach. Like to Brian's point, I think really mixing it up and just taking your time to really, you know, explore. Like maybe you're doing it one neighborhood at a time. Maybe you're just kind of doing one set of side quests at a time in between larger things. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, your mileage may vary. Cardi,
I would add to that, if you mainline the story and then are going through district by district, I think you can do it district by district if you mainline the story and do it that way, but otherwise don't try to finish off a district unless you finish the story. That's one thing I will say, because it's just...
You'll have to go back anyway.
There's not a lot of stuff, and there's some things that don't pop up till later if you haven't finished the campaign. The way I did it was I did story mission, and then I would do all the side missions for that popped up, and then I would... Until I was there's nothing left, and then I would do the story mission. And that was a very enjoyable way for me. I really enjoyed doing it that way. Yes, some of them did get a little long in the tooth, where I was just kind of like, okay, I want this to be done. But overall, I really enjoyed the experience, and there's... some other like smaller storylines, like The Flame, like Cardi was saying, is excellent. There's a really good one, a really great chain of quests with Miles called Bop, that is, I think it's Hard Bop or whatnot, is the final one in it. And that quest line literally made me cry. Like, and it's because it's just a fantastic storytelling experience. And I highly recommend everybody doing that.
That one, I was kind of like rolling my eyes at it initially.
We'll talk about it more in detail, like on the spoiler cast, but man,
it involves musical instruments in a sort of very cartoony capacity, but the end result is like really lovely and kind of awesome. Like it's super not wonderful. What I expected at all.
I wanted to add real quick to something Max said. So two things. I couldn't put this game down. Like I couldn't. So I think that was part of it. And you know, even with my gripes with it, like just actually like fighting people and swinging through the city and stuff like that was just like electrifying. Like I loved the parts where you're like actually really just doing Spider-Man stuff in this game. But two, I 100% of this game in less than 3 days, and I have a job and a wife and a kid. So it's like it is on the shorter side of big meaty open world games. Like Tears of the Kingdom was one of those. It's hard to compare anything to that, but like I played that game for like 150 hours and still haven't seen everything. Like there's just so much to do in that game, to the point where like I hosted a show for IGN called Talk of the Kingdom, where we talked about Tears of the Kingdom for like what was supposed to be 6 weeks, and it turned into like 10 or 11 because no one wanted to finish the game. And there's post-game content and stuff like that. And I think with this game, you can probably, like, how, Jada, how long did it take you to, like, 100% this game? 28,
I think, for the Platinum Trophy for me.
Yeah.
And that was also, I spent some time, you know, going around doing a little bit of wiki stuff, building out guides work, so that added a little bit. And then also, I spent copious amounts of time in photo mode. Mm-hmm. So, which the photo mode is awesome. Once again,
I didn't get the platinum. I came up like a few trophies short, but I did 100% it, and I want to say it took me something like 22 hours maybe. And yeah,
as far as open world games go, like it is fairly short, which mm-hmm. you know, some people are going to be like, not for $70, no thank you, Sony. But other people are going to be like, hey, I got other stuff to do. I'm going to get around. Yeah, I mean, right now, like Assassin's Creed Mirage is out, and that is a complete like 180 from what the last three games were, which were like 120 hour open world RPGs. Yeah. This is more of, I mean, I think there's open world game and there's sandbox game. And those are, mm-hmm. you know, kind of different concepts that have like, it, you know, how you approach things. And this one is, yeah, I mean, it's not, it's what I think, what did Akeem said he beat it in like the campaign in like 13 hours?
Yeah, he mainlined the story. And I think
mine was like 17 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the key is that these aren't necessarily open. They are open world games, but they are single player campaigns. They are basically Uncharted games in an open world.
Yeah.
And
you have a really big.
And I know why they've done it, mm-hmm. because it would be mad to have Spider-Man and not have an open world to swing around in.
Yep.
But like ultimately, this game, and I think the whole series, that is best when it's just telling a really solid story. And mm-hmm. yeah, that's what this game does do amazingly.
I think, yeah, I mean, the story, like the idea of pacing in a world is completely ludicrous. Like that doesn't make any mm-hmm. sense, because like the pacing mm-hmm. is your pacing, you do it at your own speed. Yep. But if you're like, if you're just like guzzling down like the main storyline, like it's gonna seem a little bit jolted if you're speeding through it. Like it's kind of trying to do a speed run when you can go in any direction at once is like a right. weird, that's a weird approach. It's kind of funny, it reminded me a little bit, I think if you pace yourself right in this, it could be a little bit like the old cartoon. Which mm-hmm. I didn't realize as a kid, because you're a kid and whatever, but the animated series, the old one from Fox Kids 40 years ago or whatever, because I'm old, that was serialized. Like that in X-Men, the animated series had running through lines for each season. Like they didn't have like standalone episodes. They had like occasionally, you know, there'd be like a little bookend thing where it's like, here's one thing that's going off in one corner. The rest of the episode is related to something. But it was very comic booky in that sense. And right. this mm-hmm. has that vibe too. And it's funny because like I think if you get lost in one of the side quests, it can really feel like a filler, you know, filler issue or filler episode in the best way possible, where mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, there is that open world problem where it's like, well, the universe is about to get destroyed, but I'm going fishing, and it's like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
But in the superhero context, it works. This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone.
1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
And that's where it kind of comes together in terms of like feeling like a sort of lived in place. Because the reality is, it's like you can't truly compare this to other open world games because there's like just a significant lack of interactivity, and most of that comes from the narrative justification that Spider-Man is a good guy and he's not going to go down and punch a civilian and steal their car like you can do in GTA. There aren't enemies everywhere like there are in Breath of the Wild, you know, like it's not this, there aren't shrines like there's, you know, like
you can throw a bunch of trash cans around though if you want.
That's true. Just... yeah, you can go down and like really scare a bunch of people like you could in the last few games and just like throw manhole covers and, you know, put on a show and everyone's like, the psycho is back. But for the most part, it's like, you know, Spider-Man's a good guy and he swings through the city and he soars on web wings, and occasionally he gets a call on his phone or listens to a podcast and he goes down and he beats up some bad guys and he goes back up and he swings around. Maybe there's some hidden stuff and some collectibles, but like this does not have the depth of like a GTA or a Tears of the Kingdom or a Skyrim or something like that. This is just not, and never will be, one of those games, right? Like
that's fine. That's okay.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, totally fine. But yeah, just go in expecting like this, you can 100% this game in like 20 something hours. And
I think I kind of had expectations that were maybe unrealistically high just on the basis that this is a flagship PS5 title, you know, like mm-hmm. Spider-Man, the first one was one of the big PS4 games. That game kind of defined that generation. It's one of the best selling games for the PS4. And then we got, you know, like an up-res, you know, next gen version kind of alongside Miles. And then I was kind of hoping that this would be like a real huge revolutionary step forward, and it technically is, I guess, but it also kind of isn't, you know, and that's all right. You know, that's kind of on me. I think the fact that there's a big old number 2 at the end of the name makes it seem like it, you know, it's a sizable jump forward. That's version 2.0, mm-hmm. but they could have very easily just called it, you know, Spider-Man Venom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, mm-hmm. it's like this, I was like getting into this before, but like, Name another like movie franchise or game franchise that got 3 installments in 5 years that was able to like completely revolutionize each time, right? Like it's almost impossible to do something like that without keeping it kind of iterative. And that's okay too. Like if you want more of the same, because the same is super, super good and very, very, mm-hmm. very fun. Like I keep saying, like it is, I could not put this game down. I loved punching people and swinging around and all that stuff. You want more of the same, this is more of the same, and the same is awesome. If you wanted like a big leap, or you know, I don't really think that like Queens and stuff like that and Brooklyn is like, you know, it's expanding the city a little bit more, but like those places are inherently less interesting than Manhattan.
You say that as a New Yorker, because you know it's there, but I feel like other people are like, wow, even more New York to explore, and you're like, you know,
there's trees here.
Yeah,
there's trees.
I don't know. I think, yes, it is a lot more of the same, but I think it does everything that the first two games did better. So like you're getting an enhanced version. You're getting more stuff. It is better. It's maybe not the scope may not be as big as people were hoping with adding all of Brooklyn and Queens and stuff. Basically, you know, almost doubling the map, basically. The scope may not, like, even though the scope's increasing, it may not like equally improve across the board, but you are getting improvements in pretty much almost every other system in the game. The writing is fantastic. I don't think I went an hour without laughing, whether it was one of the podcasts, one of the characters you run into, just Peter talking to somebody and dropping a little quip. Like it's great. And then the unlockable stuff is a lot of fun. Like I really loved a lot of the unlockables. Some of the stuff is you know, not my favorite that we've gotten in Spider-Man games, but there's some really cool options in there that I think fans are really going to love in this
Without spoiling anything, because this is, you know, kind of been touched on in the comics and stuff like that, but the Venom stuff, and you've seen in the trailers and everything like that, that obviously mm-hmm. Peter gets a little symbiote in him, sort of works as like a truth serum between characters, in that they start having very vulnerable, very honest conversations with each mm-hmm. other that they maybe wouldn't have unless they were like severely under the influence or something like that. And so, yeah, it some very truly ridiculous and funny, but also heartfelt things come from mm-hmm. all of that. Again, without spoiling any of it, that like I wasn't, it went in directions I wasn't really expecting at all, and was just kind of like, oh, all right, cool.
One of the things I remember the most, like most vividly about the first game that I think caught me off guard, is there's a part where like I think Peter gets in like a text argument with MJ, and then mm-hmm. she calls him, and like it gave me like legit like mad girlfriend anxiety, and I was like, and it was just like it felt very authentic, like it felt like how people interact with each other. And I feel like this has some similar beats where it's like, you kind of want, you know, you want big, bombastic superhero, supervillain. Ha ha ha, you'll never get me. I must save the day. True, great power, great responsibility. But it delves into like, here, you know, here's 20 somethings arguing. Like, here's, you know, here's people mm-hmm. having a legit mm-hmm. friend fight, you know?
And core tenet of this character and both of these characters is disappointing their loved ones frequently. Like that is just a thing that they've done it in the comics, do it in the movies, the shows, everything. Like, you know,
I mean, that's kind of superhero 101. Like you're going to be disappointing somebody because you're giving so much of yourself mm-hmm. to save everybody else. Yep. So
yeah, you're not disappointing those loved ones, it's because they're already dead.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the only real solution. But no, I mean, it's this game is kind of, you know, at odds with itself, because like when you have a Spider-Man game, you want to be Spider-Man. You want to swing around. You really want to feel like Spider-Man too. And
it really makes you feel like Spider-Man too.
That was Cardi. I love your review so much. You really just did it. There's a lot of very,
you just gotta lean into it. Have some
very
fun.
Subtle and very infuriating. Like I think I threw something in my wall because of what is it you say? Like it. It's got miles of emotional depth, and it doesn't peter out in the end.
Did you say 7.0 too much webbing?
No, I didn't. I didn't go full in.
But it's like it's great. There's a lot of fun stuff in there. But like trying to have the authentic, you know, having a Spider-Man simulator, it wouldn't be a fun video game because there is that inherent disappointment. And I feel like there is an idea for a Spider-Man game out there that takes the sort of Persona 5. You only have time for so much mechanic, and mm-hmm. you are both, you know, you're pissing off your girlfriend and your loved ones, and you're doing a bad job at your job. You're getting fired from pizza places. You get yelled at by your boss all the time, but you save the day versus you don't save the day and you're happy. You know, that's not a fun video game mechanic. There's a lot of buyer's remorse with that. So, I mean, I'm kind of, on that sense, I'm happy that it's a fun game where you swing around and punch people.
And Peter gets to have some fun in everyday life. So they have a nice night out at Coney Island at one point. I mean, I've not been to Coney Island, but I imagine it's just as nice as that. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they didn't do the hot dog eating contest, which I'm disappointed in. That's okay. That's a 4th of July staple in America.
I think there was an NPC about that, though. There's a photo thing that talks about that.
There's no hot dog eating contest because the champ is there.
Yeah.
You can go talk to him.
That's true.
I mean, we haven't really, we haven't really talked about Harry, and I just think he's a great addition to the cast as well. Like, it's such a delicate balance of when you have, like, an established, like, trio of MJ, Peter, and Miles. They all work so well together. And then adding that extra ingredient to the mix, and I just think he slots in really well. Like, it's genuine, great story reasons why he's there and what happens with that character, and... yeah, kind of the catalyst for the whole thing, really, and it just really works really well. Lovely hair as well. I love his hair.
Yeah, it felt really natural. It was great.
I feel like that's a huge departure from the comics. If you look at the old illustrations, Harry Osborn has some of the worst hair ever drawn with a pen. Yeah. It's just looks like a Brillo pad. It's like a very weird thing. His dad has it too. They've got these nightmarish
nose. It's different from the comics as well, in that he's actually just quite a nice young man.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's an odd choice. Did they try to do that? They've tried to do that in a few of the movies. Like, I feel like he's kind of a spoiled brat in the comics, and you kind of, mm-hmm. you know, we've been known that the Osbournes are bad news mm-hmm. forever. That's always been the case. And like, don't know what you, the James Franco Osborne was like, they kind of got a little weird with that. It got like a little bit too, love triangle-y, you know? Mm-hmm. And then with the Dane DeHaan version and the Amazing Spider-Man, I feel like they kind of try to make it like, oh, they're childhood friends. And I think this borrows from that a little bit.
Oh yeah. They definitely built on that with this, especially with all the work that they were doing as kids, the fact that his mom, he was so close and built, there's so much dialogue around him and like all the work and how like he just like respected his mom and loved his mom so much that he wants to follow in her footsteps and do more of her. They definitely leaned into that kind of more of familial relationship for him instead of with his father, which is probably where they more focus in the comics. I don't remember. I've read a lot of Spider-Man comics, but it's been a while. I don't remember them ever really mentioning Harry's mom in the comics outside of like maybe brief things. Whereas this, in the Spider-Man Insomniac Marvel Spider-Man games, like it's kind of front and center. We hear about her almost as much as we see Norman Osborn. So like it's kind of, you know, it's great. I love that they both did that up.
I think like sort of maternal figures are like a very strong reoccurring theme across all of the central main characters here. Mm-hmm. And have been since the first game, which is good. I mean, like the way they connect with the women who raise them, what they do or don't do in their absence, like a lot of that is like, it's really well done and it's like, it's really touching. And it's something that is like impacting almost all of the main characters, and seeing how they navigate that is really cool. And I'm doing everything I can to, you know, tiptoe around spoilers here, but those are some of the themes that I think are like kind of like, they're not in your face at all. They're fairly understated for the most part, but like they're there and they're strong in a way that like you can really respect when you learn to look for them.
Yeah, this one, it's funny if you saw the last Spider-Verse movie with the whole, they talk about like canon events and how there's like some things you can't change about Spider-Man. Otherwise, it's not Spider-Man, whatever. And I feel like this game definitely, it is one of the bigger departures in terms of Spider-Man lore, you know, shy of doing a full on alternate dimension, like doing like, oh, it's like Spider-Punk or like, Bombay, Manhattan, whatever. But like it's interesting because it's like superhero mythology is very flexible. It's very malleable, and that you can reinterpret things and reinvent things and, you know, retool things. And like, it's funny how when Miles Morales was first introduced, I remember there were people like, Black Spider-Man, get out of here. That doesn't work at all. And here we are like 15, 16 years later. And it's, you know, he's fully accepted. He's great. He has the better movies. Spider-Man. Yeah, seriously. pound for pound. But there's stuff in here they do with the story that, you know, as kind of like an old, you know, crotchety old Spider-Man fan who's, you know, I've consumed various different interpretations. This one took some pretty big swings and I was okay with it. It worked for me. Yeah. There's, you know, some minor tweaks, which we'll probably get into in the spoiler cast, that were like kind of had me scratching my head. But for the most part, I think it really sticks the landing, like as far as like really trying to do new things and actually succeeding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's kind of almost beauty and simplicity as well, which kind of like this game doesn't, I'm not spoiling the story in any way, but it's a relatively simple story. There are twists and turns, there are surprises, but it's not, you know, it shows you don't need, you know, and I love the Spider-Verse films like to death, but like they are convoluted. There is so much going on. Whereas this is kind of a simple story of a few friends and their grief and where it goes. And that's kind of the crux of this story for what, 17, 18 hours, that's mm-hmm. how long it took me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I kind of appreciate that it kind of, you know, it's open world, it kind of aims a little lower than I thought, but it kind of than I'd like it to. But it kind of just sets what it wants to do and just kind of does it, just executes it. And yeah, I kind of love it for that.
I liked I liked a lot how they handled the sort of presence and mass of the villains this time around. Like Kraven feels like this big, you know, formidable, dangerous thing. Like he is strong as hell, and
he's the predator.
Yeah, he's a predator. Yeah, and he's got a whole crew of henchmen who are like trying to hunt you down. Lizard, who we saw in the trailer, is part of one of my favorite set pieces I think I've ever seen in a video game. It's mm-hmm. and you see it. I actually hate that they showed any of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It sucks that they showed any of it. We're showing it now because you've already seen it probably. But yeah. it does some truly, truly awesome stuff, especially like the stuff where you're outside in Manhattan in the middle of the day. Just like jaw dropping. Mm-hmm. Like it was one of those things where, like, you know, my wife and kid were just like kind of like passing through the room where I was playing games and just stopped to stare. And I made him sign an NDA and, you know, all no. And then like Venom also, like they nailed him. Like Max and I did this really, really cool thing. Max had an awesome idea.
Wait. Are you sure it was Venom that they nailed? It wasn't Venom nailing them? 19 inches, Brian.
They're gonna flag it.
Make you wait for that Venom as well. They really do, like, yeah, make you, yeah, wait for it. Yeah, they really do just hit you with it.
Sorry,
yeah, I was pretty surprised at how, I think there's like 31 or 32 missions in this game, and I feel like Venom doesn't show up until like 20 something. Like, it, the story did take a while to get cooking. Like, which is, I think, Carter, you hinted at that before too. Like, mm-hmm. it's like the first half of the story of this game, like, kind of takes its time, and then, yeah, and then it just, it goes boom, boom, boom towards the finish line. But yeah, like Venom just like looks awesome. Like, we did, Max and I did a mm-hmm. thing at New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con that I was going to talk about before Jada derailed me, which now I have to message HR. It's like a whole thing. where we showed Todd McFarlane, who like co-created the character, we showed him what Venom looked like in this game, and he just went through all the details, and he's like, they got the saliva right, they got the teeth right, the tongue, you got to do the tongue, you know. And like, it just looks so good in this engine. Like, it's just, yeah, one of those things. We, yeah, we waited so long for this character to show up. You know, he's, whether or not he's your favorite or not favorite Spider-Man villain, he's easily the most iconic one. And, you know, we've seen him not done particularly well, and then we've seen him in the game like this, where it's like, yep, you got it, you nailed it. Like, when he shows up and he starts tearing stuff up, you're like, yeah, this dude would kill me, this dude would rip my head off and destroy me.
I think this is my favorite Venom adaptation outside of the comics. Like, it's, he's really, like, he's good. Like, I think visually and sort of like technically speaking, like how, what he mm-hmm. does. I will always love, you know, Tom Hardy climbing into a lobster tank at a restaurant and just eating the lobsters, or like cleaning out his fridge and eating all the pizza rolls before cooking them. Like, I think that's got its charms. But in terms of just like the sort of sheer like hulking presence of Venom, like,
yeah,
this game delivered. And I always wish that we spend, what, 2.5 years complaining that Sony doesn't show us anything, and then the game comes out like, they showed us too much, they didn't show us, they showed us the best parts. It's very cautious with how it sort of like it makes you wait for Venom, which mm-hmm. is yep. which is, I'm okay with that. And when it, you know, when Venom shows up, he's freaking awesome. What I didn't realize is how much I love Kraven.
Oh, yeah,
I guess I hadn't really thought about it too hard, but I like really appreciate that character, and this interpretation of him is just phenomenal. Like, yes, he's mm-hmm. really, really cool. And I think that was my favorite performance in the whole game. I'm not sure who played him, but like, it was walking such a fine line of like being one of the cartoonier supervillains in the Marvel universe. Like, he looks like he's, you know, stepped off a glam rock concert stage or was in Cats or something. Like, he's got a ridiculous costume, and they made it work.
Yeah.
And his mm-hmm. he's got like this kind of brooding gravity to all of his lines and stuff, and he's just like, yeah, he looks awesome. You know, they managed to make him like, again, really, really big and hulking. He's got this real just like brawler, you know, supervillain presence. And I guess I wasn't expecting that. You know, I thought he was going to be sort of almost like a throwaway yeah. villain, but he, you know, he earns his keep. And
he ties into the overall story exceptionally well. I thought he would be like a first act villain, and he's not. Like, they really get a lot of mileage out of him. He connects to the other characters super well, because he mm-hmm. you know, he wants to hunt stuff too, and like, he, you know, to those things, to the Spider-Mans, which they make a joke about with, you know, whether or not that's Spider-Man or Spider-Mans, it's a jury's still out. They want to stop those things because they're dangerous to the city, but Kraven's like, I want to hunt them because hunting is fun. Like, I want a challenge. But they also get surprisingly, shockingly personal with his story and his character mm-hmm. and the way other characters connect to him personally and like what he's going through as an individual, which like doesn't justify any of his actions, but also kind of just enriches him for who he is. The way they handle the big villains in this game make me so excited for how they're going to do stuff like, you know, Sabretooth and in Wolverine like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
We're, yeah. You know, we don't have to get into all that right now, but yeah.
Also, was this game a T rating? Was that? I feel like it was rated T.
I think it was like it might be like a 16 here.
Yeah. So yeah. But I mean, 16. If they definitely push the envelope a bit, you know? It gets pretty gruesome at times, and I'm so excited for Wolverine.
Even the way we kind of said it earlier that he's a very nice person, but Spider-Man, even the footage we're seeing here, he's killing people. Over the course of this game, you're murdering hundreds, mm-hmm. hundreds of just random goons. Like, there's a lot of broken skulls.
This is really
I saw your tweet, Brian, that you did with or whatnot, with them just slamming the dude into the crosswalk.
Insomniac put out this short thing of just like Spider-Man just lifting a guy into the air. He's just like some random thug and then standing in Midtown like he was jaywalking. He's got a backwards hat on. He just looks like a Limp Bizkit roadie. He lifts him like 12 feet in the air and then slams him right down on his face. And I just tweeted out, I was like, this guy is absolutely definitely dead, or at the very least, you know, has significant brain damage for the rest of his life. Like, he's paralyzed from the nose down or something like that, you know? Same. And like, this has been a running joke in these games forever. It's who cares? I'm not complaining about it. I just think it's hilarious because it's always one of those like, Spider-Man doesn't kill, but like, yes, he'll whip a manhole cover at somebody from across. I texted Max a picture of this one woman who's in a gang, and I didn't even know how I just beat her up in a fight. And I looked down afterwards and she was just like, she was in like a, almost doing like the walk like an Egyptian, but flattened on concrete with her legs and arms going in different directions. And her eyes were wide open. So she was just kind of like, and I definitely killed her.
Really? Yeah. I did like a thing with Miles where I did like a big electricity punch and I launched a guy off like a 5-story building and he like landed on a shed or something on like another roof, but he was suspended with like electricity and I was like, he's still getting electrocuted and he fell off the building. Like, there's no way this dude is not super duper dead. Like,
I webbed a woman into a vent in an abandoned building. I don't know how long it takes for that stuff to rot off, but like,
yeah,
she's probably just stuck up there and just runs out of food and water.
I can't tell you how many times I've webbed in across all the Spider-Man games. You've webbed somebody to a surface and then a cutscene happens and it explodes or a car drives through. And it's just like, well, know what? I could not have foreseen this one. This technically
it's like some jigsaw logic. It's like, you can get, if you can saw through your leg or the webs, you can get out of here. No problem. Anyway, see you later. The building's condemned. It's going to get collapsed in any second. There's one thing I wanted to touch on. And Jada, you called this out. I think this is the best fast travel in a video game, period.
Ever. Yeah. This is the best fast travel ever. Spider-Man 2's fast travel is the best fast travel we've ever gotten in video games. It's going to be, I don't know how any game tops it after this, because it is just, it's so quick. It's lightning fast. It's literally instant. And it's pinpoint accuracy. There are a few spots where you can't fast travel like directly onto a mission. It'll drop you like 100 feet south of the mission. But like, it literally, if you look at like one of our wiki maps and it's like, oh, I need to grab this collectible here, you can literally fast travel and you will like drop out of the air right above that collectible, it's like right.
And there's no load screen. It's pretty much instantaneous, which is, I think, one of the coolest things this game does. I think it completely showcases it. That said, it's extremely weird that you have to unlock fast travel in this game. You have to go district by district and complete enough things in that district to basically like level up the area so you can fast travel there.
Right. Which,
again, this is a game that encourages you to do its incredible traversal. It wants you to swing around. It wants you to glide around and do that stuff and actually see the city. And if I was just trying to like, you know, clear off a checklist of items, I could go do chores instead of playing a video game. The point is to have fun, enjoy yourself. But it seems extremely weird, partially because the fast travel is so impressive. You'd think that they would want to showcase it. But also, this is the third time we've been in this city. And the first two times you could just take the subway. But now Spider-Man's too good for the subway.
Maybe it's all down. We don't know. Maybe there's a train worker strike going on.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some bit of dialogue explaining that. But it's really weird to me. I think there's a feeling of like, okay, I've been here before. I know where I'm going. I know how to get there. On that note, I think we should wrap things up. We all clearly have lots more to talk about with Spider-Man. Please, for all that is good and sacred, go read Cardi's review and send him one angry email per every instance of ridiculously clever wordplay. It's just erring on the side.
That's not many, then. I'll get none, then.
You'll get 3 to 5 emails per person who put your little tidbits in there. Next week we'll have a big old spoiler cast. Might be up a little bit late, just a friendly reminder. If you are having any trouble finding all the collectibles in Spider-Man, go check out our IGN Guides wiki. Everyone's working very hard to get those pictures of Spider-Man ASAP for Jameson and the Daily Bugle. And on that note, thank you all for watching and or listening. We will see you next time and beyond.
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 Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.